Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Deep left into the bleachers, a two-run homer.
A swing and a miss, ball game.
Liftoff.
And history marches on, 22 consecutive wins.
From the sports desk of the Akron Beacon Journal and Ohio.com, this is Leading Off with Ryan Lewis, a podcast on the Cleveland Indians.
Santana makes the catch! Ball game! The Indians have won the American League pennant!
The Cleveland Indians are going to the World Series!
Now, Ryan Lewis and Dan Kadar.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. This is Dan Kadar from Ohio.com. Of course, Ryan is joining me. Ryan, before we, since we last talked is the better way to put it, the All-Star Game happened in Cleveland. Now, and the Home Run Derby did too. We're not going to go too long on either of those things because both of us completely whiffed on the Home Run Derby predictions. But if you had to put a final bow on the All-Star Game in Cleveland, the whole grand festivities, weekend of events, and game and derby, if there is one moment that you're going to remember from the 2019 All-Star Game in Cleveland, what is it?
Yeah, I think it definitely has to be the moment for Carlos Carrasco during the Stand Up to Cancer tribute. That Stand Up to Cancer moment is always, it always carries with it so much, you know, power and meaning and emotion, and it's a really special thing that has been happening during the All-Star Game for the last several years, to just completely stop the game and to kind of, you know, express support for so many people close to them. It's really a great thing, and to see Carlos Carrasco walk out of the dugout, and then to see the four Indians All-Stars and Tito join him, their signs red cookie, his sign red, I stand. It's just something that totally transcends baseball. It was really something to watch, for everyone there, everyone watching on TV. The power of a moment like that is what is going to stick with everybody. It was really cool how it was done. The support that Carrasco has gotten, during the time that he's been that he's been dealing with this is something that he thanked his teammates and the fans and everybody for a few days after that. So the second round of the Home Run Derby between Jock Peterson and Vlad Guerrero Jr. was exceptional. It was so much fun to see the entire crowd. It wasn't just rooting for either guy. They were kind of rooting just for it to continue. That was fantastic. Shane Bieber winning All-Star Game MVP and having that moment with the entire All-Star crowd chanting, let's go Bieber, let's go Bieber. His dad, crying in the stands. All of those things are tremendous. It was a wonderful All-Star week. The weather was perfect. Everything kind of worked out. Probably better than anyone with the Indians could have hoped or planned. But that moment with Carrasco was just kind of special, and I think that's kind of thing that's the thing that's going to kind of stick with a lot of people.
I agree completely. But now we're moving on to the second half of the baseball season, and of course the Indians started it with a not great showing against the Twins to start things out, and now they're in a series with the Tigers as we record this. So let's kind of do a little bit of a reset here. And we've talked a lot on previous podcasts about what the Indians should do this season in terms of, are they going to be buyers or sellers? And really, the conclusion has been both. And I think that notion of it being both is starting to permeate elsewhere. Like Buster Olney of ESPN, who is, of course, amazing at writing about baseball, wrote a big, huge thing about the trade deadline. And, you know, they listed five teams that are going to be buyers, five that are going to be sellers. The Indians were in neither. And there's been, of course, other stuff written about the trade deadline coming up. And the Indians are kind of like the stuff you might expect, you know, the Bauer trade, Brad Hand trade, potentially. It hasn't been overwhelming that, yes, they need to do this. And it hasn't been overwhelming that, oh, man, they need to bring these players in. So let's reset it for us, Ryan. You know, the deadline's coming up on July 31st, of course. You've said in the past you think they could be both buyers and sellers. Is that still your stance?
Yeah, I mean, when you know, people like to kind of put that label on a buyers or sellers, there's mm-hmm. a third option that is essentially both. You know, I think what the Indians might do in the next couple of weeks is a continuation of what their goals were last December during the winter meetings, which is to keep the team competitive now while also reallocating resources to better set up, 2020, 2021, 2022. It's a difficult, high wire act to try to kind of hold both of those thoughts at the same time and go toward both of those goals at the same time, trying to win now while also ensuring that, whether it's, talent, control, and probably the most important factor, affordability within the Indians' payroll, making sure that they aren't necessarily going all in toward either direction. So the Indians could make some significant moves without necessarily going too far in either direction. They could deal, a Trevor Bauer, who's under control for 1.5 seasons now. He's going to be near the top of their annual payroll list. He's kind of out of the range of being very affordable or a great deal compared to market value. He's going to be expensive. You have a guy like Brad Hand, who it often makes some sense to sell high-end relievers, and Brad Hand's value just about could not be higher right now. And if the Indians can get an offer for an Andrew Miller-like package, it's something they're going to have to at least listen on. But those returns don't necessarily have to be 100% in the direction of buying and going all in right now or selling for future seasons. It could be a reallocation of resources. They could shift things around the roster, try to get a hitter, especially try to get a corner outfielder who can supply some more punch to the middle of the Indians' order. I think that may be the direction that they go, where they may get some guys who are younger, they may get some guys who are a little more inexpensive in terms of their service time and control, while also kind of setting up both 2019 and future years. So, it's going to be interesting to see how this deadline works out, considering this is the first one where teams will not have the extra month of the waiver deadline afterward. So you could see a flurry of moves. Tito mentioned yesterday he's curious to see if there's, a severe, uptake in moves right at the buzzer on July 31st. Mm. So it'll be interesting to see how teams kind of respond to this, and in the Indians' point of view, if they're going to be able to kind of try to follow both goals and follow both paths that they're trying to at the same time, which is not an easy thing to do, but it's kind of in the cards that they've been dealt while they've had to cut payroll while also trying to maximize their contention window. And I think that there's a chance that they kind of follow that path, just like they have been for the last 6 or 7 months.
Yeah, I agree. And it's interesting, at least in my mind, and maybe I'm unique in this aspect of what the Indians should do. It seems like every single day I go back and forth on what my opinion is. Like Brad Hand, for instance, I think I've said before on the podcast here, if they trade Brad Hand, it's sort of a white flag being raised, even though the Indians do have a very good bullpen to maybe mitigate that. But I go back and forth on trading him. I go back and forth on, like, everybody keeps talking about the Yankees trading Clint Frazier, and if the Indians would be a target for that. So it's been crazy how I keep going back and forth, and I would love to know, like, what the Indians think. Like, if I could be a fly on the wall, you know, in the GM office, in the president's office, and know what they think, it would be fascinating, because it's really... It seems so different compared to previous years. And then, like you said, you add in the, you know, the waiver deadline stuff. So it's going to be interesting. Go ahead.
Sorry, and just as with anything, the easy part of all this is to decide, okay, if we were in the front office, we decide, okay, we'd like to trade this guy for this package. Mm-hmm. And it's easy to say we'd like to deal, say, Trevor Bauer or Brad Hand, because we need to... add to the lineup. We believe that we have the arms in AAA that could, provide some help to the bullpen, some depth there. And plus, the bullpen is something that, seems to deviate from year to year, and things kind of sometimes just stick to the wall or they don't. So maybe that's the area where you try to maximize value and take what you get. The harder part of that is actually get the deal that works based on value, then also works based on what you need on your roster. So the Indians have about 2 weeks to kind of find that deal. Whether or not they get it, it is something where I think they would like to make a trade along those lines. I think they do feel like they need to reallocate some of those resources. They need to move some assets around the roster. They need to add to the lineup. They need to kind of maximize what they're going to be able to do payroll-wise for the next couple of years. So some movement, I think, would be wanted on their part. It just depends if they're going to get the deal that they feel like they can pull the trigger on.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to put you on the spot with a specific name, but I'm going to throw one out myself just to, call my shot. I'm lifting the bat here on the Leading Off podcast. To me, Mitch Haniger of the Mariners is the guy that I'm keeping in mind for a possible Indians trade. He's the right fielder there. He's been out with an injury for a little bit, but he has the power that the Indians obviously need. And like you mentioned earlier, he plays a corner outfield spot, and he is extremely affordable, which is perhaps priority number one. Who knows? So that's the guy for me, Ryan. That is like the perfect potential trade option for the Indians, or logically perfect.
Yeah, that would make a lot of sense. I think a lot of fans would definitely love that move as a really solid right-handed outfielder. And it's possible they stay within the division. Nick Castellanos could potentially be an option. He hasn't been as bad defensively as he's been in his past, which has always been a pretty big problem, and it's a situation where the Tigers would certainly like to move him for something if they can. The Indians and Tigers windows are not going to match up at all, at least in terms of his deal. So that may be something that'd be a more aggressive move, but, depending on what the Tigers want, it's something that the Indians could at least explore. But, Haniger would be a very big get for the Indians for sure.
It would be, and I'm glad you mentioned Castellanos, because he's the other guy that really comes to mind for me. And I don't know. Three-team trades in baseball are very bizarre, but to me it just makes... If it was possible, it just makes sense where the Indians aren't dumping prospects. They're dumping, like, Trevor Bauer to a good team that needs a starting pitcher. That team's trading the prospects to the Tigers, and the Tigers are sending Castellanos to Cleveland. It's extremely convoluted, but... That's part of the fun of baseball, really, kind of figuring out the hot stove trade activity kind of nonsense. So that is kind of where the Indians stand right now. Our stance is the same as it's been, so we'll see as the month continues to progress here, as we hurtle toward the trade deadline. Ryan, do you have any quick health updates on some of these guys that are out for the Indians, particularly the pitchers? Like, Danny Salazar is in Akron again tonight. He pitched, 2 2/3 in his last appearance in Akron last week, or the week before, whenever it was. I have to imagine he's going to be doing several of these. It's not just going to be a couple before he's back in the majors. So beyond Salazar, who again is in Akron tonight as we record on Tuesday, do you have any health updates on any Indians?
Well, for the most part, it's a updates are coming situation. Corey Kluber has been reevaluated. Tito was asked about it yesterday before the game and kind of said we'll have an update in the next couple of days because he said that they wanted to kind of notify everyone that needs to be notified because this would be a major step for him once Corey Kluber is able to start throwing bullpens. It sounds like that could be close, but the fact that they've sort of delayed that announcement, we're still kind of in a waiting pattern just to see. You know, it is such a significant injury that you want to sort of be cautious here, I guess, and kind of wait and see how things go before saying, okay, well, he should be able to do this or should be able to do that by this point. So I think they are seemingly being cautious. We may have it in an update soon. It should be within the next couple of days at the least. But if all goes well, he's been throwing out to about 135 or 150 feet in long toss. If he's able to get on the mound, that's a major step towards him being able to, return to the rotation. Carlos Carrasco, as Tito said, I think on Thursday, the last day of the All-Star break, he's been throwing some bullpens, and Carrasco mentioned that he's been feeling pretty strong. That's more somewhat positive news. His situation is obviously very delicate. There's certainly no timetable there, but Kluber and Carrasco seem to both be progressing. And then with Salazar, like you mentioned, he's definitely progressing, and he's clearing milestones that he hasn't cleared in two seasons for the most part. I'm sure that the Indians are still holding their breath every time he takes the mound. I kind of envisioned him as a multi-inning reliever, as an option out of the bullpen, a guy who, certainly has electric stuff, terrific strikeout rates, and a guy who, if he only needs to worry about an inning or two, maybe that alleviates some of the, some of his concerns with his shoulder. The positive of keeping him in a rotation role is that you keep him on a five-day routine, and that may have some benefits in terms of just monitoring his shoulder. So for now, that's what they're doing. So we'll see as he continues to ramp up his volume. If he doesn't have the shoulder, will stop barking, which it hasn't for 2 years. But if it does, you could see him in Cleveland at some point this season.
It's fascinating. Ryan, I have one last topic that I'm going to squeeze in this week, even though we could have held it until next week, I think. But I need to get it out there. We talked for like basically almost the full first half of the season about how Bobby Bradley is what the Indians need. Bobby Bradley has been called up for a little while now. I don't have all of his stats right in front of me, but I do know that they're not good. And he has hit one home run, a beautiful, majestic, long, 457-foot, absolute bomb of a home run, but just one home run nonetheless. We've also talked in the past on the podcast about the Indians and seemingly their feeling on position players being brought up, that once they're brought up, they're here, and they don't go back down, except for the rare exception when a guy's injured or a guy's out for maternity leave, whatever it may be. But with Bobby Bradley, he has been up for a few weeks now, and he is struggling badly. Do you think that Bobby Bradley could be at risk of being sent back down to AAA, or is he in Cleveland for good?
I think that all depends on kind of how the Indians feel he can adjust. And it's something where I know that we talked about it on the podcast before he was called up, and there's all this excitement around Bobby Bradley. And when you have a younger slugger like this, who definitely is someone who, fans can watch on the edge of their seat every time he comes up to bat, there's going to be excitement around it. A lot of those guys, often have higher strikeout rates, and they have swings that especially major league pitchers, can't expose. Bobby Bradley talked about it the night that he hit his home run after the game. You know, he mentioned that there were two things that were kind of giving him issues at the major league level. One was the high volume of breaking balls that he was being thrown, because everything breaks harder, everything's faster at this level. And he was having trouble adjusting to it, and that home run he hit that he absolutely destroyed was a fastball kind of middle up, I think. And so when he gets certain pitches, he can hammer them. But pitchers at this level are really not going to be fooled by you yet. And they're not going to be lagging behind in terms of adjusting to you as fast as you can adjust to them. And that's the other thing that he mentioned, is that major league pitchers adjust on the fly in game at this level much better than they do in AAA or AA.
Mm-hmm.
If the Indians feel like this is going to be prolonged and he needs extended work to figure out his swing, that's when, you know, a guy like this might be sent down. But otherwise, there isn't a big option, and he has an avenue for regular playing time. It's not – those factors are taken out of the equation. And so at this point, do you let him kind of go through, some speed bumps? And sort of similar like Oscar Mercado just did. He had a 1-for-25 stretch, and then he made an adjustment. He had a 2-home run night, Monday night. And also sort of like how they've been hoping Jake Bowers would, you know, sort of adjust on the fly as younger hitters. This is a much younger lineup than what the Indians, you know, were appearing to go into this season with, you know, dating back to the winter meetings. It's a much younger lineup now, and these growing pains are sort of expected, and it's really a factor of, can Bobby Bradley close any holes in his swing, and how quickly can he adjust? Because that's something that, as he's learning, is really one of the major parts to succeeding at the major league level.
It really is. So we'll see. I'm obviously still fascinated by Bobby Bradley, but when you've struck out 20 times in 45 at bats, that's not good. Ryan, anything else this week before we get out of here?
Nothing else. I'm just glad that I didn't have to tweet out a picture of me eating a jelly-filled piece of toast, or topped, I guess, jelly-topped piece
yeah.
of toast. I'm glad that Pete Alonso took down Acuna.
Yeah.
My pick, Josh Bell, did not to last very long, but Vladdy Jr. and Jock stole the show, and nobody had to eat something they didn't want to eat, so it worked out.
Yeah, I still think I'd rather have you eating jelly than, you know, a great home run derby, to be honest. Ronald Acuna, you let me down.
Yeah, I understand how that would have been more fulfilling.
Yeah.
I was worried for a while. I was worried. We were texting.
Yes.
And I was slightly worried, but it worked out.
Yeah, I think there was at least one all caps exchange via text. So.
Yeah, possibly with expletives, but...
Yes, I'll leave it at that.
Unconfirmed.
Right. So that is going to do it here on Leading Off. You can let your imagination run wild on how stressed Ryan really was during the Home Run Derby. Make sure you're following him on Twitter. He's @ByRyanLoose. You can find all of his stuff over at ohio.com/Indians. It's going to be a fascinating next couple weeks here with the Indians, so make sure you're staying up to date with all that. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And we'll talk to you next time.